Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 274, Scoob! And now we're in space. Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, the number one place to get your animation fix with animation addicts just like you. Each episode, we dive into the wonderful world of animation featuring Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, and everything in between. From hilarious discussions and movie reviews to interviews with industry insiders, this show's mission is to brighten your day through our love of animation. So hop on your nerdy couch, grab some snacks, and get ready to hang out with your animation besties because it's time to dive into today's episode.
Hey there, animation addicts. I'm Morgan Stradling.
And I'm Chelsea Robson.
And this is the last movie in our dog series. And we're ending it on a Halloween note.
Ooh.
Kind of.
Well, I will be... So for anybody who's listening on Halloween, I will be working diligently in order to get this out today. This is early in the morning, like 8 a.m. And because we have a deadline on... Generally, we have it out on Tuesdays, but today's Monday. And I really just want to have this out. So that's my goal. Hopefully, I'll be able to do that.
We will do it.
This will get done. Morgan, how has the trick-or-treating been for you this year? What have your kids been dressing up as?
It's been pretty good. You know, nowadays, in the modern era, it seems that trick-or-treating is not just a Halloween day activity. There are multiple parties, Halloween parties, fall festivals, festivities, mm-hmm. trunk-or-treats. And so the children have many opportunities to wear their costumes. So,
which is much better, I think, than, you know, when we had it was like, no, you get one day. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. Unless, so costumes, Pippa and Graham, they both selected their own costume and they're just the cutest age right now where they pick really random things. So Graham wanted to be a mailbox because he really wanted the box to open up. And according to him, his basket would be on a hook inside and people would put it in the basket.
Well, that is that's a bit much
because there's not a lot of room inside the box.
But the fact that he had that whole thing like engineering mind, I'm very impressed.
Yeah. So he is a USPS blue mailbox. Jared, my husband, is a mailman.
Nice.
To go along with that. Pippa wanted to be grapes. So she has a bunch of grapes. They're purple. It's a bunch of balloons that have been pinned onto a purple bodysuit. And then I made this cute headband thing that has leaves and
curly Q
vines. So unfortunately, she wore that to the very first party at the beginning of all the festivities about a week and a half ago. And as grapes do, they shrivel up.
Aww.
So some of her grapes are now shriveled. But that's fine. We'll just,
undo them and replate
them today before the final party. She only wore it for that first party. And then we've had two or three, maybe, other ones in between. And she's chosen to be Elsa for those ones.
Okay.
And so for the final one, I was like, no, we made this grape costume for Halloween. You are being grapes because the grapes are so freaking cute. Like, it is the most adorable costume ever. So... Like, we are getting our moment with this. So that's tonight. We'll do that. And you know what? My friend just sent me a picture. Her whole family's going as Encanto because, you know, Encanto has taken over the world over the past year. It's crazy. It's almost been a year since it came out. And she sent me her picture as her as Abuela. I'm like, oh, you make a great Abuela. You know, she's 30s. So I'm like, hey, you know what? I need to participate. I love dressing up. It's just I don't have the energy. Really?
Right.
So I need either you next haven't year explained do a big family why. Part.
You haven't explained publicly why.
Well, I'm pregnant.
Oh,
yeah. Hey. So, but I mean, also just if even if I wasn't, I'd be tired from all the kids.
I mean, so. I get that.
So I saw her costume. I was like, oh man, I need to try a little more. So maybe I'll do a family costume next year, or I will participate, you know. So that is that.
Nice.
So Chelsea, what are you doing for Halloween?
Well, so I'm not very exciting, and to go along with your I'm tired a lot. Well, I'm not necessarily tired a lot. I just don't really have a lot of reason to get all dressed up as I probably would have in past years. But I decided that this year is going to be one of those extra things that I'm like, nope, I am going to kill two birds with one stone, and I am going to be a marathon runner because I am training to do another marathon, well, half marathon. I'm not doing a full. But I'll be doing a half marathon in February. And so I was like, you know what? I am going to wear all of my three medals that I've gotten over the past however many years. But I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And I tried to wear them, but then it was just like, they were all clinking out like everywhere I went. And I'm like, this is just annoying. I'm done. So anyway, that was my Halloween try, but all good. It's all good.
Well, I'm very, very glad. That'll be fun. So let's jump into this movie. This is The Final Dog, The Ultimate Dog. You know, this is an iconic pooch. So we are going to jump in to the movie Scoob!
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
But we ain't afraid to do it. Tastes like candy, yeah, I might chew it. Tastes like candy, yeah, I might lose it. Yikes, might get spooky. Scary hours, but we ain't afraid to do it. Tastes like candy, yeah, I might chew it. Tastes like candy, yeah, I might lose it. I've seen a figure in the fog. Hope it isn't quicker than my dog. I've seen things that would make you shiver if you saw. She said I got whiskers and some paws. Cause baby, I'm a dog. Late night cruising. Something's out there and I don't know if it's human.
Okay, so our main discussion follows one of the most iconic dogs of all time. Scooby Dooby Doo, where are you? So before we get started, let's give a little background on this film. This film came out during the period which shall not be named. So it was scheduled initially 2018, ultimately was pushed to May 15th, 2020, which is just the right in the dead center of the pandemic. Trolls World Tour had done very well doing their digital only release. And so Warner Brothers kind of took a chance and followed in that footsteps, even though they were warned that it might not go as well for them. So on a budget of $90 million, ultimately the box office for this, it was released in other countries, and they did kind of release it for 3 days a year later in the U.S., $28.5 million, which is not great at all. Now, of course, we don't know how much it did as far as the video on demand, the premiere access, and all of that. Supposedly, Trolls World Tour did $100 million in its first month, and it's expected that Scoob did 30 to 40% less than that. So it's hard to say, was this a success or not? But, you know, so there's the information. Oh, also, it was directed by Tony Cervone, and obviously the studio is Warner Brothers Pictures and Warner Brothers Animation. The animation specifically was done by RealFX, who have done quite a few films from from time to time. So that is that. So this came out during an interesting time. And I remember when it was released and I remember all this drama, but then I ultimately never saw it because, you know, who's going to pay $20? I certainly didn't. So for not any of the movies at that during that time, it was like, no, unless I have a giant group of people where it was economically worth it.
Right.
But no, that wasn't going to happen. So, but I know a lot of people that did.
I did not also. I didn't. The fact, like, I guess part of the trailer, I think they showed a little bit of the young Scoob, and I felt like that was a little off-putting, which when I watched it, I was like, yes, this really is off-putting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I didn't see it then. I watched this while I was on my flight to New York. And so I was like, all right, we'll put this on today. And yeah, so that was you can just picture me sitting on a very cramped flight with two people on either side, not giving me any room and just being like really uncomfortable, but being able to watch Scooby-Doo. And so that is where my mind was when I was watching this.
Nice. So, you know, Scooby-Doo is an interesting franchise. It's been around for such a long time.
Yes, it really has.
This series it was created by Hanna-Barbera in 1969, and it has just had so many reiterations of this franchise over the years. Scooby-Doo himself has had more voice actors than you can count, it seems like, which is, you know, it seems like for Mickey Mouse, that you could count them on one hand sort of thing.
Right.
But they keep switching it up for Scooby-Doo. It was voiced by Don Messick from 1969 to 1996. He was the main guy. And then, then for some commercials or live shows or this or that, you know, they found other people. But seems like he was kind of the main one. But now it's, if you look on the Scooby-Doo page, it's like, this person did this for a phone message. This person did this for live on stage. This mm-hmm. person did this for the movie. It came out 2004. It's just interesting. So yeah, Scooby-Doo, he's iconic. And you know what I think? He's just simple. He's a simple character. He doesn't talk a lot. And that's one thing I think that makes him special, is that he says very few things, like Scooby-Doo-Doo.
Yeah.
And, you know, he can't, most of his words, you know, start with the letter R. You know, he has this sort of like speech impediment, if you will, because he's, you know, a dog.
Right, right.
But it's so endearing and it's cute. And his, for me, charm comes from the physical, all the physical things that he has to do and the pantomiming and this and that. And with this movie, Scoob, they didn't really focus on that. We're going to talk about the movie. I just wanted to give a little backstory into, you know, the show. But, so the show Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? And surprisingly, only ran for three seasons, 1969 to 1970. You think how iconic the show
is? That's really surprising.
But it really was very short. And that, I think, just goes to show, if you go back to a lot of these like classic shows from the 50s or 60s or 70s, you think like, wow, they were amazing. They were everything, but they really didn't have that many seasons. And I think that may work in their favor because they kind of end before it gets bad.
Yeah.
Kind of like The Simpsons. And it allows them to remain iconic and short, you know?
Well, there was a almost unwritten law during the 90s where any series wouldn't go over 100 episodes. And generally that was four seasons. And it was just like, after that, specifically if you were like, if you're dealing with like kid actors and things like that, then you're just going to, it's just going to be more complicated to be able to replace voice actors or not. Or if they're like, if it's live action, it's like, you really can't, you've reached your expiration date after 4 years, you know? So
right.
I can definitely see how that was a thing for this movie as well. But it is really surprising the fact that it was so iconic, because there's not a lot of shows that are able to become that iconic.
I remember in junior high, you know, coming home, and I don't know what random station it was, but they would play Scooby-Doo. And that's kind of where I was first introduced to it, because obviously I wasn't born in 1969. And these shows got a lot of replay. Mm-hmm. And it just became part of pop culture. And, you know, there's been many special features over the years and movies. And obviously, like we were talking about, spinoffs. Specifically, the Mystery Gang and Scooby-Doo has been reimagined so many times that it's just there's too many to count. But this one is the original, and it has, you know, we should introduce our cast of characters. We have Scooby-Doo, who's the dog. We have Shaggy Rogers, who is Scooby's BFF. He wears green and he has shaggy hair. We have Fred Jones, who's kind of the all-American football player type, though I don't know if he plays football. Then we have Daphne, who's the redhead, who's the babe, and then Velma Dinkley. So she is the nerd who wears the orange sweater, says jinkies. You know, they kind of have their own things that they say that kind of make them iconic.
IMDb is always going to be a weird place sometimes when you're looking at like cast, because they almost always rank them by how much like they get paid and whatnot. And so mm-hmm. you have like the voice for Scooby-Doo, which one would think it would be much higher, but he's like 10th on the list, is like, oh, it's way down there. You know, Frank Welker, you know, right, that's it.
Right. Yeah. Whatever.
The Blue Falcon is Mark Wahlberg, which I actually didn't recognize. And Zac Efron was as Fred Jones. So I was Amanda Seyfried as Daphne, and Velma got actually higher ranking than almost everybody. Velma, Gina Rodriguez. And so it's just kind of funny how that ends up working out, like what they end up doing with that. But there's just a lot of people in here that I really didn't realize as I was mm-hmm. watching. I mean, Simon Cowell definitely understood that one. But Henry Winkler as well. I was like, what? I didn't realize you were in there at all.
You know, you mentioned Simon Cowell, and I think that is one of the things that epitomizes this movie. This movie is a mess.
Yes.
It's a disaster. It's all over the place. It could be, you could take random screenshots from different parts of the movie and not even know that it was the same movie.
Yeah.
We have, you know, Simon Cowell make this proposal in the beginning and total cameo, not just, you know, he's someone else.
Right.
It's him.
Right. I think anytime you bring Simon Cowell into the scene, I think he had his day. And anytime now that he's on there, because he's so typecasted, it's just going to be, I just feel like it dates it to 10, 15 years ago.
For sure. Simon Cowell, immediately you think of the heyday of, obviously, American Idol went for a long time, but you just think early 2000s.
Yes.
And we'll go back and talk about how they all meet, you know, and they have their children and they meet up and they become the Mystery Gang. But when Simon Cowell gets introduced, it's 10 years later and they want to, you know, help make Mystery Inc. a business. And so they bring in an investor, and this is their investor meeting just at this random cafe. And it's Simon Cowell, which I'm like, Simon Cowell, he's a music producer. That's his shtick. Why wouldn't you bring in, you know, one of the sharks from Shark Tank?
Right.
You know, who at least, even that's kind of dated now. Like, probably that's 10 years dated at this point. But that would have made more sense.
I mean, Gary Vee would have been fun.
Gary Vee, but not Gary Vee. Like, right. Gary Vee's voice as just, like, a generic investor.
Yeah.
Immediately, once I saw Simon Cowell, I was like, oh, like, what is this? Because also, I don't know if you noticed this, the main characters are really, as far as their character designs, really disjointed. They're not really cohesive. But then a lot of the background characters are really Uncanny Valley to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like Simon Cowell felt Uncanny Valley, that when they get chased by that police car, or at the very beginning, the police officer on the bike,
uh-huh.
he felt like kind of like rotoscoped, Uncanny Valley, motion capture. Something was off. And yeah, so I see the Simon Cowell, like, creepy thing. And, yeah, and so Shaggy and Scooby, I guess we could just, if we're referring to the both of them, we'll just call them Scabby. But Simon Cowell, he says, no, I don't want to, you know, you guys are too childish. So I'm not going to invest. And this gets both of them really mad. So they quit the group and then they go to the bowling scene and then, you know, kicks everything off.
No, but the whole thing is like friendship can't solve everything. And it's like, oh gosh. Okay. So this is really what the, this is what the entire movie is going to hinge on, is that sentence, friendship won't solve everything.
I felt like a lot of this movie was very transparent.
Yeah.
You know, at the very beginning when they become, when Shaggy and Scooby, like, he adopts him, becomes part of his family, and he takes him to his room, and then he starts showing him his, like, action figures. I'm like, 100%, they're going to play a part. Like, this, we're going to see this guy somehow. Whether the Falcon is going to be a bad guy later on or something, like, there's no reason why they're really highlighting this. At least that's what I thought. And so this movie is weird because we have that beginning. I think the only good part of the movie is when they're all kids.
Which I thought was weird, too, though.
I liked when they were trick-or-treating.
I don't like Scooby as a kid, as a puppy. I don't like that they made him talk so eloquently. And it was just really off-putting. I did not like that. They should have just made him be like, you know.
Scooby should have been traditional Scooby. He talked way too much in this movie.
Yeah.
He had too much of a personality. It's a no-go.
Yes.
Took me away. I mean, at this point, this has been a very established property, and I understand wanting to mix it up and make things different, but this one didn't work. We didn't need him talking, almost attempting to be a human with the amount of talking that he was doing.
Yeah.
He's a dog who can say maybe a few things, you know?
Yeah.
I thought the best part, honestly, was when they were trick-or-treating and they kind of all like met each other and have that little scuff with the haunted house. Like, to me, when I think of Scooby-Doo, I think of abandoned building, abandoned amusement park, abandoned whatever, you know, something spooky where the mystery gang goes in and they solve a mystery, right? And so when they go into that haunted house and very quickly discover, you know, the mystery, and that there's all the classic catch lines, like, I would have gotten away with it if it weren't for you meddling kids.
Right, right.
I liked all that. And I thought that was good. I thought it felt pretty natural. But then once everything, basically when they were adults, was a no for me.
You know, my favorite part of the entire movie was the bullies. And at the very beginning when they were like, the candy's going to rot your brains. It was just like, I was still chuckling about that later just because I was like, oh, it feels like they're totally gone to hippies. It's
the children of hippies. I was like, they're not wrong.
They're not wrong. And I kind of felt like kids with parent minds, but also bullies. It's just kind of funny. Mm-hmm. I was still chuckling about them like a couple days later after this. But the fact is, like, that was the best part of the movie for me, legitimately. Yeah.
Which is unfortunate for the movie. You know, so we have a variety of different settings. So we have the modern day setting. Then we go into more of like a superhero film with the Blue Falcon.
They're on the spaceship.
Spaceship and whatever. And then we also have the prehistoric island, which is Messick Mountain, which is really bizarre with the caveman guy. And then we go back, then we go to Athens and then put this like overlay on it. And Cerberus is there and the portal to the underworld. All of these things. It's just like, what is this movie trying to be? Is it an ancient Greek, you know, sort of history film where they're solving something, they discover something from history? Is it a modern superhero film? Is it just a regular, you know, everyday solving mysteries around town sort of thing? It couldn't decide what it wanted to be when it grew up, and it decided, let's do it all, you know? Like, for Halloween, I don't want to just be this, this, or this, but I'm going to combine them all. And people are like, what are you again? I don't know your costume. And that's how this movie felt. And it just kept getting more and more silly and obnoxious and just confusing. You know, like, oh, well, it turns out Scooby is the last remaining descendant of Alexander the Great's dog, Paratus.
Right.
What? Okay. Where are we? And then the bad guy, you know, and Dastardly, you know, Dick Dastardly. And it's just, okay. You know, Scooby-Doo always had the mystery bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, kind of in the shadows. It's someone doing something, but we can't figure out who it is. And then you reveal it at the end, and they try to do the the gag of the double reveal, the double, you know.
Right, right. Oh, it's this person. No, actually, it's this person.
Don't was like, okay, yeah, but.
I will say that the Funland, you know, they go to an abandoned amusement park. And I think that that's one of the creepiest parts of this whole thing, because it's like you have this like disembodied clown head out front and the funhouse mirrors and everything. I've always thought that they were kind of creepy.
I would have liked that to be a bigger part of it. Like that, once they went there, I was like, oh, this is traditional Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
And you knew that that's the reason why they went there, because it's iconically Scooby-Doo. You know, and it's almost like they felt, oh, well, yeah, we need to go to the abandoned amusement park. But that was a really cool design. It was just like felt really old. It had a cool vibe to it. There was a lot that they could have done there. And another thing I didn't love, and I'm sorry, this is just like a total negative Nancy episode, but it was a mess. This was a total mess. was just that the other members of the mystery, you know, gang were background characters. You know, that were basically pushing the plot along as needed.
Yeah.
There was no heart to this movie. Like, ultimately, at the end of the day, I'm like, why do I care? You know, what's the motivation for Scooby and Shaggy or anyone? Like, the most we kind of got was the Blue Falcon character, kind of. You know, where we see, you know, he was replacing his father. And he kind of reveals to Scooby how he feels. But it's like, why do I care about him? You know?
Yeah, no, watching this movie was like trying to summarize the Fast and the Furious series. The whole thing starts out just as like family, friends, driving cars, and then some solving petty crime. And now we're in space. It's just like, what?
What? You know, I've never seen any of those movies, but I wouldn't expect it to go there.
No, but that's what happens. In like the ninth one, they like go to space. Like, what is going on?
Yikes.
And like the moral of the story is always clean out your Roomba vacuum. Like, okay, got it. Because they have the little machine that's like, oh, I'm going to, if you clean me out. So thank you. I'm always going to be your friend. So like I'm watching this and I'm realizing this is like really long and hard to sit through. But I'm also wondering if I'm just not the target demo. Were your kids able to watch this at all?
I did not watch it with them.
Okay.
I watched it on double speed, which helped significantly. But even at the shortened, you know, essentially 45 minutes, it was too long. It wasn't good. It just, as every new setting or character started getting introduced, it was just like, I was rolling my eyes. Like, what are we doing here, guys? Like, who is this for? This clearly isn't, you know, the Brad Bird approach, as we've been talking recently, where it's for all audiences, but it's mostly, but it's not designated or designed for kids first. It's adults first. And hey, because it's a good script and good stories, good plot, kids will enjoy it too. This was not that. And it's like, I just wanted to be a fly in the wall when they were developing the story, because like, how did we get here?
Yeah.
At what point does someone watch like the animatic of this and think, this is amazing.
Works.
This is good. You know?
No, guys, seriously, this is good. That is a question. Like, okay, so if you're working at a company and you're like, and somebody comes up and pitches this movie and says, I have the best idea for a Scoob film. We're not even going to call it Scooby-Doo.
I would do the old Scoob. Simon Cowell or the other guy, like, I'm out, dog. No.
Oh, that's funny. This kind of gets me on another soapbox. When you look at Halloween movies and we try to pretend that they're good just because there aren't very many of them.
I know where you're going with this.
So there was a meme somewhere and I believe you sent it to me. And
it's Babylon Bee celebrating 29 years of pretending that Hocus Pocus is a good movie. Right?
It's true. Yes.
That was the one?
Yes, that was the one. But it's so true, because you're looking at some of these films and I think it's like almost all Halloween, and especially like Halloween music. So Marissa she has a thing where she likes to play holiday specific music anytime any holiday comes around.
Nice.
And I mean like any holiday. So Memorial Day, we have fireworks music all the time for Memorial Day. So Halloween, she's had that playing. And then they'll have a couple different songs pop up. And I'm just thinking, man, forget about the Christmas music. If you write a really good Halloween soundtrack, then you're going to be on repeat every year, because there's people that it's not going to be nearly as big, but all as what you would get out of like a Christmas album, a great Christmas album. But if you're going to do a great Halloween one, you're dealing with supply and demand. Even though demand isn't like out of this world, it's still enough. For example, I did a cover of the Arizona State song, and I still get paid at least $100 a year in some kind of royalty just from that one video, and I released it on streaming. Is it because it's like amazing? I love Arizona. So yes, it is because it is amazing. But it is also the fact that people look and search for the Arizona State song, and mine's like one of the only ones that comes up. So it's keyword focused. And I feel like that's kind of what you're getting into when you're dealing with like Halloween movies, because there are some movies that are going to make it work out. And there's almost always like a Scream, Scream 2, Scream 3, Scream 4, you know? So it's like, we're just going to keep hitting this as much as long as it works. And I kind of feel like that's what this was.
Although we're doing this on Halloween, this isn't necessarily a Halloween movie in the least.
If I were to think of Scooby-Doo, I think Halloween stuff, just because of the costumes and the masks and everything. So that's why I decided to put it on this day.
They lost what makes Scooby-Doo Scooby-Doo.
Uh-huh.
And they tried to make it this other thing, which I understand. Like, how many times has Scooby-Doo been done at this point? But for some reason, you got to keep the elements that keep it itself.
Right.
You know, you take too many of those away, or you swap them out and you do this, this and that, and it's no longer recognizable. And that's ultimately what this was, you know? Yeah. If they would have made this, you know, haunted, like the haunted house at the beginning, the haunted amusement park, like really spooky and scary and makes you jump, that would have, been so much better of a film.
Yeah, if they would have just
released it in October,
that.
And of course everyone's going to show up.
Yeah, if they would have just focused on that and actually leaned into the Halloween thing, it probably would have worked out way better for them, knowing their audience.
And drop the Falcon stuff.
Yeah.
Drop the Cerberus otherworld stuff. It was so bizarre, you know. And of course, there were no stakes in this movie either. So at the very end, when they're like, oh, the friends have to separate and give sacrifice for each other.
Right.
And, you know, and so it's like, oh, is it going to be Scooby? Is it going to be Scooby, Shaggy? Who's it going to be? And then ultimately it's Scooby-Doo. And it's like, as soon as he got into the portal of that other world and he wasn't going to come back, I didn't care. I'm like, he's coming back. Like,
right.
3, 2, 1, he's going to be back.
Right.
And ultimately, like, on cue, that's what ended up happening. And it was just so silly that's like, oh, well, he actually went back in time and he wrote this statue that shows you how to bring him back. And here's the statue now. Oh, my gosh. It's like, what are we doing here, guys? Why are we doing this? It's goofy and dumb.
Yeah.
So
I, you know, they could have.
I'm very sorry. I try to be very positive and look at the positive in things. And this wasn't one of them.
So, okay. So we're rewriting this script right now. The next Scoob is coming out for Halloween. And so it's a Halloween audience. Basically, which one of these settings was your favorite? The abandoned amusement park?
Well, I think you kind of hit all of them. I think they go on an adventure and they try to figure out. So they start off in the, you know, they go visit someone's house where the clues are and they have adventures there and spooky antics happen, you know, in that haunted house. And then, you know, end up in a spooky forest that's pretty scary. And, you know, maybe there's wolves that are chasing them or something, you know, hear wolves in the background or something scary happens there.
Now,
you know, and then they stumble on this old abandoned amusement park while they're at it and discover, you know, more crazy antics ensue.
Do werewolves exist in the Scooby-Doo universe?
I mean, no, but someone dressed as a werewolf tried to scare them.
Okay.
Sure.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think kind of hit the big main bullets. And then maybe return back to the haunted house for the final clue where you discover who it unmasked this person. Like, here's the thing. They tried to recreate the wheel, but the wheel was perfectly fine. And I think for this film, just doing traditional Scooby-Doo stuff would have worked and would have been fun, and just make it really spooky and creepy. And that would have been perfectly fine enough for a Halloween film. You don't have to throw like your, oh, a goblin, a werewolf, a ghost, you know, but like they do have kind of, you know, ghosty sort of things, but you could have some of those elements that are kind of scary. You don't need a pumpkin, right? Like,
well, that was the thing about the original Scooby-Doo is that everything seemed to be sci-fi and in some type of otherworldly something happening, when it was always revealed that it was like a light show or all of these things, so that it was based in the real world, but it was just trying to like mess with them and scare them. So, I mean, that would have been totally on point and on brand. But I feel like, honestly, after the last couple movies that they've tried to do, like the live action movies and into this one, like they're really just losing the plot.
Swing and a miss.
I mean, even though in the original show they brought in Scrappy-Doo and nobody liked him. And so,
well, yes,
but they actually used that to their advantage in one of the live action ones, because they actually made Scrappy the villain of them all, which I thought was clever and cute. Not my favorite movie, but you know, that aspect of it, this one, I feel like they could have, they really should have just like gone back to the basics and stuck with that, and then made it something really cool. Like, for example, they go to the Parthenon or whatever. And did you know, in Nashville, there is a life-size replica of the Parthenon with a gold statue of Athena?
I did know this.
Well, there you go. Awesome.
Randomly. Yeah.
And so it's like they could have like been in Nashville, you know, like, oh, we were in Nashville the whole time. You know, it was just, they could have made this like going all around the world kind of thing. But now we're in space with Marky Mark. So, So what would you rate this?
Oh, man, I would rate this maybe 2 stars.
Okay.
1.5 stars. It was so terrible. I had a hard time finding anything enjoyable from it. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, I'm going to give it 2.5 stars. I thought it was watchable, but really disjointed. And so I didn't really get it much out of it in that way. When I say watchable, I was trying to put myself in like a kid's shoes. Like, would a kid watch this? Would this be watchable to them? And I thought probably I could see how they could get behind this even just a little bit, but not entirely. And it was definitely not something like, it's been a couple weeks since the first time I watched this, and I was like, yeah, I don't really remember much other than like a couple different things. And I even had to go back and like look up, because I had made a whole bunch of notes when I was watching it. And when I said that the moral of the story was to clean out your little Roomba, I had to go back and remember, what does that even mean? Because I couldn't remember that part. So I was like, oh, man, this was really forgettable, unfortunately.
All right. Let us know your thoughts on Scoob. Go to rotoscopers.com/274. Leave us all your thoughts there. Did you like it? Are we totally crazy and this was a good movie? Let us know.
If you want to send us a voicemail, we would love to hear from you. Make sure to go to rotoscopers.com/voicemails, or you can dial 406-646-6575. Seriously, we'd love to hear from you. We actually are really excited because one of our next episodes is going to be a Barbie movie with a very special guest. One of our patrons, Sol, will be joining us. And then we are continuing the very last of our Pixar Canon tier ranking series. We'll also have another episode of what are Disney's best and worst live action remakes. Good times are going to be had.
Good times. If you thought Scoob was a good time, get ready for that.
I am looking forward to the Barbie movie. It's because Morgan and I are a little bit older. And so Barbie didn't like hit our generation the way some of these other movies did. And so it definitely hit hers. And so she's helping us, introducing us to some of the most fun Barbie movies. So that's exciting. And also let us know what kind of series would you like us to do? We just got done with our dog series. We did Sergeant Stubby. We did Fox and the Hound, Frank and Weenie, Island of Dogs, and now Scoop.
We hit quite a few doggies. Now, so other than the Barbie movie, we will be doing a lot of holiday-related films coming up. We're going to do Free Birds. And we're going to hit Eight Crazy Nights while we're at it. And a few Christmas movies at the very end of December. So buckle up, get ready. We're going to be having a good grand old time over the next few months on the Animation Addicts podcast. And thanks so much to our patrons, as always, who support the show. We just got off a Rotocast a few days ago where we got to hang out and just catch up on life. So you do get a brief glimpse into our lives, and we talk about a variety of topics here, but that's even more so on the Patreon cast. So if you want more of that and you want bonus episodes, ad-free episodes, then go to rotoscopers.com/patron to join there. That's all we have for today. Until next time,
we are the Rotoscopers. Actually, there was one other quote that Dick Dastardly, who's like, my friends call me Dick. And, yes. And I was just like, you mean you let them?
Yeah.
It's a spooky day. La, la, la. Oh, where is my spooky thing?
Thunder tube?
Oh, I
let's add the thunder tube.
Where's that darn thunder tube when you need it?
There you go. The thunder tube.
You've been listening to the Animation Addicts podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you want to help spread the word, be sure to share the podcast with your friends on social media. Just don't forget to tag us at Rotoscopers on Instagram and use the hashtag AnimationAddicts. For all the links and full show notes for this episode, go to rotoscopers.com/podcast. Now, if you still can't get enough for your animation fix, be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube and visit rotoscopers.com for more animation news, reviews, and interviews. Thanks for listening.